countries have suffered. Someday I will tell you about the suffering we have endured from these corrupt men. And your hunter will change that? How should I know? But we will try. In any case, that is not your concern. The hell it isn't. You talk with great confidence for the representative of a new and very shaky government. And you, Comrade General, talk very confidently for a man who less than 2 weeks ago was on the brink of defeat. Remember what you said of luck? Push us hard if you wish. The Soviet Union can no longer win, but both sides can still lose. You know how close it was. We nearly defeated you. If those damned invisible bombers of yours hadn't hit our bridges on the first day, or if we had managed to smash 3 or 4 more of your convoys, you would be offering me terms. Make that 1 or 2 more convoys, Robinson reminded himself. It was that close. I offer you a ceasefire in place, Alexeyev repeated. It could begin as early as midnight. After that, in 2 weeks, we return to our pre-war lines, and the killing will stop. Exchange of prisoners? We can work that out later. For the moment, I think Berlin is the obvious place. Berlin, as expected, had remained largely untouched by the war. What about the German civilians behind your lines? Alexeyev thought that one over. They may leave freely after the ceasefire. Better than that, I will allow supplies of food to pass through our lines to them, under our supervision. And mistreatment of German civilians? That is my affair. Anyone who has violated field service regulations will be court-martialed. How do I know that you will not use your 2 weeks to prepare a new offensive? How do I know that you will not launch the counterattack you have scheduled for tomorrow? Alexeyev countered. Actually, a few hours from now. Robinson wanted to accept. Will your political leaders abide by your terms? Yes, will yours? I must present it to them, but I do have the authority to honor a ceasefire. Then the decision is yours, General Robinson. The general's aides were standing uneasily together at the edge of the trees. Also watching was the platoon of Soviet infantrymen and the crew of the helicopter. General Robinson extended his hand.
Thank God, said the Soviet aide.
Da, agreed his American counterpart. Alexeyev pulled a half-liter bottle of vodka from his back pocket. I have not had a drink in several months, but we Russians cannot have an agreement without one. Robinson took a swig and handed it back. Alexeyev did the same, and threw the bottle against a tree. It didn't break. Both men laughed out loud as the relief of what they had just agreed to swept over each like a wave. You know, Alexeyev, if we were diplomats instead of soldiers... Yes, that is why I am here. It is easier for men who understand war to stop one. You have that right. Tell me, Robinson. Alexeyev paused, remembering Sakyer's first name, Eugene. Father's name, Stephen. Tell me, Yevgeny Stepanovich, when we made the breakthrough at Alfeld, how close...
Very close. Close enough that even I don't know for sure. We were down to 5 days of supplies at one point, but a couple of convoys got through nearly intact, and that kept us going.
Robinson stopped walking.
What will you do with your country?
I cannot say. I do not know. Comrade Sergeyev does not know. But the party must answer to the people. The leaders must be responsible to someone, we have learned that.
I must go. Pavel Leonidovich, I wish you luck. Perhaps later.
Yes, perhaps later. They shook hands again.
Alexeyev watched Sakyer summon his aide, who shook hands with his Russian counterpart. Together they boarded the helicopter. The turbine engines whined into life, the four-bladed main rotor turned, and it lifted off from the grass. The Black Hawk circled the field once to give the escorting choppers a chance to form up, then headed west.
You will never know, Robinson, Alexeyev smiled to himself, standing alone in the field.
You will never know that when Kossoff died, we were unable to find his personal codes for control of our nuclear weapons. It would have been at least another day until we could have made use of them. The general and his aide walked to their command vehicle, where Alexeyev made a terse radio broadcast that would be relayed to Moscow. SAK, Federal Republic of Germany. Colonel Ellington helped Isley through the trees. Both men had been through escape and evasion training, a course so tough that Ellington once swore that if he had to go through it again, he'd turn in his wings, which was why he remembered the lessons he knew. 14 hours they'd waited to cross just one damned road. He figured 15 miles from where they'd crashed to friendly lines. A walk in the country that had turned into a week of hiding, drinking water from streams like animals, and moving from tree to tree. Now they were on the edge of some open ground. It was dark and surprisingly quiet. Had the Russians pulled back here?
"Let's give it a try, Duke," Isley said. His back had gotten worse, and he could walk only with assistance.
"Okay." They moved forward as quickly as they could. They'd gotten 100 yards when shadows moved around them.
"Shit," Isley whispered. "Sorry, Duke."
"Me too," the colonel agreed. He didn't even think about reaching for his revolver. He counted at least 8 men, and they all seemed to be carrying rifles. They converged quickly on the 2 Americans.
"Wer sind Sie?" a voice asked.
"Ich bin Amerikaner," Ellington answered. "Thank God they're Germans." They weren't. The shape of the helmets told him that a moment later.
"Shit, we've come so close."
The Russian lieutenant examined his face with a flashlight. Strangely, he didn't take Ellington's revolver. Then something even stranger happened. The lieutenant flung his arms around both men and kissed them. He pointed west.
"That way. 2 kilometer.
"Don't argue with the man, Duke," Isley whispered.
As they walked off, the Russian eyes were a physical weight on their backs. The 2 flyers reached friendly lines an hour later, where they learned of the ceasefire. USS Independence. The battle group was heading southwest. In another day, they would have been in position to hit the Russian bases around Murmansk, and Toland was going over estimates of Russian fighter and SAM's strengths when the recall order came. He closed the folder and tucked it back in the security cabinet, then went below to tell Major Chepayev that they would indeed live to see their families again. North Atlantic. The C-9 Nightingale hospital plane cruised southwest also, heading for Andrews Air Force Base outside Washington, D.C. It was filled with Marine casualties from the last fighting on Iceland, 1 Air Force lieutenant and a civilian. The plane's crew had objected to the civilian until a 2-star general of Marines explained to them over the radio that the Corps would take it as a personal matter if anyone took the lady away from the lieutenant's side. Mike was awake most of the time now. His leg needed further surgery. The Achilles tendon was torn, but none of that mattered. In another 4.5 months, he'd be a father. After that, they could plan a child of his, too. Norfolk, Virginia. O'Malley had already flown to the beach, taking the reporter with him. Morris hoped the Reuters correspondent would be able to file his last story on the war before he moved on to something else. An after-the-war story, no doubt. Reuben James had escorted the damaged America to Norfolk for repairs. He looked down from the bridge wing at the harbor he knew so well, mindful of the tide and the wind as he docked his frigate. One part of his mind pondered by itself what it all meant. A ship lost, friends gone, the deaths he had caused, and those he had seen himself. "Rudder amidships," Morris ordered. A puff of southerly wind helped Reuben James up to the pier. Aft, a seaman tossed a messenger line to the men on the pier. The officer in charge of the special sea detail waved to a petty officer, who keyed the announcing system.
What it all means, Morris decided, is that it's over. A crackle of static emerged, and then the petty officer's voice. Mooring! This concludes the reading of Red Storm Rising. Copyright 1986 by Jack Ryan Enterprises Limited and Larry Bond. This full-length reading was published by arrangement with the William Morris Agency, Incorporated, and was produced in 2002 by Books on Tape, Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. This book was read by Michael Pritchard.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.